On this week's Back of the Grid, we're going to be talking about the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, Ollie Bearman's call up to Ferrari, and a quick look at all of the feeder series. Let's go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 300th episode of Back of the Grid, which is a wild number. I am, as I was in episode one, Chris, and I'm joined, as ever, by Stu.
Hello.
And by Tom.
Hi there.
Stu sounding as thrilled to be here as ever.
Yeah, 300, man. I'm amazed we made it past 250, to be honest, based on the last couple of years.
And what a race we've been blessed with to talk about for a 300th episode. What a banger of a race that was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had my undivided attention the entire way through it, I can tell you.
I mean, yeah, there's some interesting stuff to talk about, not necessarily in terms of the racing itself, but yeah, we'll get into it, I guess. I mean, we'll start with the most interesting thing this weekend, which is another driver's appendix deciding to kick the bucket and the excitement that follows it.
Out of interest, which race was it that it happened last time? Wasn't it?
It was
around this part of the world.
No, it was Monza a couple of years ago.
Was it?
It wasn't. It was the one before. Yeah, it was Monza. It was Monza.
Okay, never mind.
What?
The last time we had an appendix cause a driver swap.
What? When was it?
Last season.
Was it two years ago?
Season before, sorry. Yeah.
God, we're good at stats on this, aren't we? We're so good at stats. We should just stop talking. We need to just stop, like, even raising stats. We should stop podcasting, really.
I mean, I don't know if that one's a stat, to be fair.
I think 300, we should call it a day out. 300, I think, is safe. I think
it is weird that, like, drivers have had to step out of races because of appendicitis twice, which isn't that big a number, but it's weird that it's still twice in the space of
In a short space of time. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's pretty weird. But yeah, obviously Carlos Sainz was out of the race after FP2. It was funny, like the whole way through FP1 and 2, the commentators were all saying like how horrifically ill he looks. Like he must have a really bad cold or something. And he was like, oh, it's a little bit worse.
Yeah,
that.
He's being poisoned by his own body. That's
yeah,
how
he is.
Yeah,
he's about to be operated on. He's all good though. It was nice to see him in the garage for the race. He said he's going to try and be back for the next race. I mean, Alex Albon was back in the car less than a week after his operation, and Sainz has got a couple of weeks before Australia. So,
it's relatively as a procedure these days. I mean, I had when I was a kid, I had an issue with my appendix area, and they had to like slice a whole. I was like 4 years old, and had to slice a whole line out of me, and then it turned out not to even be my appendix. So I've got the scar, but no actual. Yeah, but no. This is like really like. I don't know if I should be telling the world about this, actually, because like, if there's ever like a doppelganger, like I can't use this as a secret question anymore, but yeah, like it turned out there was something else wrong and they left the appendix in there. So now I've got this scar that suggests that I had it removed when I was very young, but actually
you'd have thought that they just whipped it out while they were there, given the,
you'd think so, but the doctor said it would have killed me because I was so ill with the other thing that if they'd taken that, I would have died. And Mum was obviously delighted to hear that. So, yeah, they left the appendix in there, and I'm still alive today. But yeah, now these days it's just so like the point is in those days it was a really hazardous, like quite a serious procedure where they had to slice through into like your muscles to get to everything. And these days it's like a keyhole thing. They just put a little tiny puncture, a little hole in you, send some doohickeys in there, and then pull out the bad stuff, and then off you go back to your Formula One race,
medical terminology,
back to the Formula One track to watch your Grand Prix.
I mean, yeah, it was literally the day after he was just there, you know. So yeah,
like I can't imagine like having sort of even keyhole surgery. I can't imagine having that and then having the energy to go and sit in a Formula One garage and watch a Formula One race.
He wasn't even sitting, he was standing half the time.
I mean, that just shows you like the recovery rate and how sort of minimal a procedure it's become these days to do. Obviously it depends on your circumstances, but you know, Formula One driver having any operation. These guys are freaks, man. They get better so quick because their bodies are just always in recovery mode because they take such a hammer. So, yeah, crazy stuff.
I suspect he will be back for Australia. But it meant for this race, we got Ollie Bearman called up for the weekend with next to no notice. It was like an hour or two before practice three, he got the call. After sticking it on pole for F2 as well, which is, it'll be peak Ferrari now if Ollie Bearman loses the F2 title by a handful of points because he had to miss a round to go and be a Formula One driver.
You know, it could end up being the case because I think that field looks tight this year. There's some really good drivers at the serious business at the front. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the F2 season pans out, I think, this year. It might be a bit more interesting than watching the F1 season, dare I say it.
But yeah, after one practice session, straight into qualifying, he just missed out on Q3 by like a few thousandths, took 11th on the grid. And then in the race, he was great. Like, he made progress, made some overtakes, managed to, I mean, so once he'd got past the sort of slower guys in front of him that qualified ahead of him, I was keeping an eye on the gap between him and Russell. And for about the last half of the race, that gap was basically staying the same. In the closing stages, it grew a bit. Maybe he'd taken a little too much out of the tyres, or maybe George had kept a bit more in his tyres. But obviously the Ferrari was a faster car than the Mercedes. But, you know, given the inexperience, he was, you know, there on the pace. And above all else, it was mistake-free. Like, he didn't really put a foot wrong, did he, the whole weekend?
Yeah, it was about as good as you could possibly expect from him, wasn't it, across a race? I mean, with an hour's practice straight into qualifying. Was it? Oh, no, it was FP2, wasn't it? He got called. Was it FP3?
No, you only have practice FP3. Yeah.
1 hour of practice, then straight into qualifying.
Off you go.
Yeah, the kid's got the goods, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I'm hesitant to get too excited because, again, 2 years ago, we did this and said, wow, what an amazing drive for this standing driver. Get him on the grid, he's going to be great. And we all know how that played out last year. But I think Ollie Bearman's a very different prospect to Nyck de Vries. Like, he's already done practice sessions. Like, Haas have always spoken extremely highly about him through the FP1s he's done and stuff. He's done a lot of prep. We know he's a front runner in F2. He's already lined up, I think, to do 3 FP1s for Haas this year. He's the real deal. Like, he's definitely got the goods.
Formula 2 races are going to be physically going to seem so easy to him this season. Yeah. Though, having done like a race like this, where it is literally pretty much, you know, tire deg is so low, you're doing push laps pretty much the entire race. For him to have like withstood that, having had no practice and not done a Formula 1 race before, it's so many more laps than an F2 race that, yeah, everything about it is just absolute, your worst nightmare of a debut for a Formula 1 driver.
And at this track as well.
Yeah, exactly. And he's just eating it up. He's just absolutely took it in his stride, the whole thing. It's an amazing job. Absolutely amazing.
Did you see his headrest at the end of the race?
No, was it in bits?
It was like, you know, like the kind of foam rest that goes all the way around them. The sides were just completely crumpled where his head had just been like...
Yeah, that you see that a lot. G-forces. You see that a lot, though. Like, you see that with a lot of the drivers, I think. But this one, yeah, you can understand. He did complain in FP3 about the size of his headrest.
Yeah, I think they overdid it with the padding a bit to try and save his neck, but...
Yeah, well, science likes quite big ones as well. But, I'm sure he lived to regret that decision by the end of by lap 50 of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, just super impressed. Like everyone in the paddock couldn't speak highly enough of the job he did. I'm almost certain he will be on the grid next year.
Just the last thing on that. Did anyone else notice that his dad is basically a doppelganger of the Ferrari CEO as well?
Yeah,
like, they're both stood in the garage and they look like the same person.
Convenient.
He's like the Spider-Man meme.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, so we'll go through the, like, interesting things from the rest of the race. We'll mention Red Bull. They dominated again. Again, Ferrari looked all right. Like, towards the end of Ferrari's stints, they had decent pace. They weren't munching their tyres. They were closing the gap to the Red Bulls. But how much were the Red Bulls pushing at the end of their stints? We just don't know still. Like, I still don't think we've seen everything that Red Bull has got to offer. And I think it's going to take a weird race where they're actually going to have to push for some reason for us to really see what that car's capable of. But it's just, it just looks imperious, doesn't it?
Sorry, 2023, is that you?
Yeah. Moves Red Bull ahead of Williams in terms of all-time race wins now. And they're only 10 wins behind Mercedes all-time wins as well. Which is
wowza,
pretty crazy. So I want to ask you guys, because it's a thing I've seen talked about a lot, whether, so we've had a year of Red Bull domination last year. It's looking like we have it this year. Rules aren't changing next year either. The question I want to ask you is, do the FIA or do F1 have to do something to try and make things interesting again? And, you know, I'm sure I can instantly hear the keyboards being like, oh, he just hates Red Bull winning all the time. But the same question's always been asked through F1 history. And there's previous, like in the Mercedes dominance era, there was a few times where they tweaked things to do with use of engine modes and stuff like
suspension.
That. Suspension, yeah, to try and peg them back. Ferrari Schumacher years, groove tires only existed basically to try and slow Ferrari down and bring them back in. So there is previous in it. And I do think, I haven't seen any viewing figures for this season yet. I suspect they're not great. Do you think they need to? Do you think they will try and do something to improve the show?
I don't think they will. Not okay. That's two questions there. Do I think they need to? Maybe, based on the fact that yes, they have, you know, they have stepped in over the years. They do seem to have stepped in quite a lot, you know, over the course of history. And it's actually been a while since they've done anything like that. Funnily enough, do I think they will? Probably not, because they're so deeply embroiled in their own conflicts internally and with FOM, and they've got so much else going on that they're probably too busy to start thinking about rule changes in order to level the playing field a bit.
To your point,
there's an argument to say that they've already stepped in to try and bring the field closer together, and it hasn't worked because Red Bull have made a much better car than everyone else. So, you know, this whole rule change and making ground effect cars, the idea was to bring the field closer together and make it more competitive and make it that, you know, I believe one motivation that's been quoted is that they've said they want the Leicester City of Formula One to win a world championship, you know, because if you're not into Premier League football, I think 2016 Leicester City, who were widely considered very much a mid-table, if mid-table team, just had an amazing one and ended up winning the whole thing. And that's just not possible in Formula One. The whole thing, you know, budget cap, new rules formula, new engine formula. 2025, I guess, is what they're looking towards now to try and get things evened out. There is also an argument to say that a stable rule set brings the field closer together, but actually that hasn't borne itself out over the course of these regulations.
No.
So it's an interesting one. I think my answer to it is they're already doing it by having a big formula change in 2026, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a long way away, but it's actually not, is it?
The problem is, though, if you can't put your finger on what is actually making them dominant, then it's difficult to do something that will immediately have that impact. Like, over the years that you've seen it with Mercedes and Ferrari, there's a specific element of it that you can almost like target, or something that you could say, well, that's a clever circumvention of our rules. However, as of next season, it's gone. That, you know, yeah, that kind of thing can be done. But if you're going to do that, like, you can't just go, you're banned from using Adrian Newey. Nobody can use Adrian Newey anymore.
Some examples for you, Tom, that you were saying there. I think Ferrari example can definitely be the burning oil scenario in 2018 or whatever it was. Yeah. And then they came to like an anonymous agreement that no one really, even to this day, know outside of Ferrari and the FIA, no one really know, and Form, no one really knows exactly what they agreed. And then an example of slowing Mercedes down was the front rear interconnection suspension, where they outlawed it.
And and like even stuff like the DAS system,
the innovations. There's always been an innovation that they've been able to outlaw, hasn't there? Whereas like at the moment, you're right, with Red Bull, it's just there's no single thing about that car that it's a package that works amazingly well. It's not just one thing. It's not like obviously, I mean, there probably is, their floor is obviously amazing. That's what's given them all this downforce and all this speed. And it's the way, you know, we've talked briefly about it, the way the floor moves under load in relation to other areas of itself, kind of thing, the thickness of the carbon fiber, the way it's woven, all those kinds of things, which you just can't see unless you know everything about that floor. Yeah. So it's all that kind of stuff that the FIA are just never going to know what it is about that car specifically that that makes it so quick. So how on earth are they going to level the playing field with that in mind?
If there was a magic bullet, other teams would have found it by now. It's
yeah, I think they would.
Yeah, it's an all round very good car in all. I think they've got
they've got a really good engine as well. Not a lot is spoken about the Red Bull engine, but that Honda engine in the back of that Red Bull is mighty. It's really really good.
It's quite possibly the best engine on the grid at the minute.
Could well be.
And like, and isn't that just classic? Look at its reliability at the minute. That's the mate. It might not be the most powerful at all times or the best, like, performance wise, but reliability is king in this era. And
well,
it's bulletproof.
Yeah, like, I mean, to be fair, the Mercedes is still very good, but maybe it's because there's more of them on the grid that it feels like you see more Mercedes failures than you do Honda ones. It's possibly like a bit of an illusion in that sense. And if it was even in that regard, you might see just as many. But I feel like that is a huge part of where Honda upped their game in recent years compared to where they were back in the McLaren days when they were first trying to get back into this and stuff like that. Like whatever change has gone on between the McLaren era to the current Red Bull era, and whether that's Red Bull throwing their own resource at it because of this Red Bull powertrain thing, whether it's just that Honda were under different restrictions and guidelines from Red Bull in terms of what they were with McLaren, with the way they wanted to package the engine. There's a whole multitude of factors, but I think that's a huge part of it, as much as, you know, Adrian Newey is a genius at leading an aerodynamicist team. There's as much to be said for the engine, I think. And it does, like you say, go a little bit underrated and undervalued in terms of how big a part of that package it actually is.
Because of the McLaren years, because it was so rubbish during the McLaren times, that people just kind of put it, they kind of put it to the back of their mind almost, don't they? Because they underrate it based on those poor performances all those years ago. But yeah, I would go further, Tom, and say that I think it's the most powerful engine on the grid and the most reliable. I think they've absolutely cracked it at Honda and Vic. And I think that is why, if we want to start getting into the sort of Red Bull power struggle-y kind of things, that's why there's a few sort of maybe itchy feet appearing from the Verstappen camp, even before all this controversy at the top of the management of the team. You know, there's people talking about potentially Verstappen not liking what he's seeing numbers wise from the Red Bull engine experiment that's sort of happening right now, and wanting to move on somewhere else. And you know, it could be that engine is so good that he's a bit worried about leaving it behind, and so maybe he's thinking about where he's going to go next right now. And all of this sort of controversy at the top is just people trying to find ways out of that team because they're really worried about that engine coming up in
2026, because the 2026 engine is going to be when Honda they stop having the partnership with Honda and it becomes Red Bull powertrains Ford.
Completely.
Yeah.
And obviously at that point in time, it's, well, I mean, I guess Ford are working on it. It's predominantly going to be a Red Bull internal development one. And yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Like the Honda engine is doing so much for them right now, and to just be, well, it wasn't their choice to leave, was it? It was, this is the classic Honda.
Yeah.
Hokey cokey approach to Formula One.
Yeah.
Because they've, they decide they're leaving, Red Bull sign a new deal. Then it's like, oh, actually, we're going to join with Aston Martin now.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre in itself. Yeah, I mean, everything at Red Bull is so weird right now, because on track, they're just serene, unflappable, dominant. Flawless.
Yeah.
Off track, it's just a circus constantly. Yeah. Like, even just taking yesterday in isolation, the general feeling on the internet went from Christian Horner's getting fired like tomorrow to that's a load of nonsense, he's fine. And like within the space of a few hours, like the rumors and then counter rumors and stuff. And it's just so messy. Like over the race weekend, there was a point where everyone was convinced Helmut Marko was about to be either suspended or kicked out of the team. And now all of a sudden that's not happening.
No one's like even talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen so many clearly very strategic, like, oh, now Helmut Marko's sitting down with one of the bosses from Thailand for a nice coffee in view of the photographers just to make a point. And oh, now Christian Horner's going and having a drink with him. Oh, now Christian Horner's wife's come over to have a photo opportunity. And it's like, it's just so
Are they
weirdly...
not just like at work?
Like, but like it feels so forced, the way that like every time there's a rumor, there's like a little photo op naturally appears to counter that. And like
it's strange. I wonder if a lot of it is just to divert attention away from the from everything that's been happening with Christian Horner himself. I wonder if it's just to throw a dead cat on the table to divert everyone's attention and make them forget about the other issues that have been going on.
I think that's definitely a big part of it. We've definitely not heard the end of the Christian Horner stuff. It sounds like that's going to be actually going to court, at which point we might hear some actual facts and not just constant rumor, which would be nice.
Well, I've got to the point now where I'm,
I've got to the point where I'm not really paying much attention to it when it is just all rumor and hearsay, because like I say, like an hour later, you'll read the opposite thing.
But again, reading comments that people write on the articles on the internet is so interesting, because people just, you can see like, you know, no one's got any information about any of this. And yet people have such like huge opinions on it. It's fascinating. No, like people are crazy.
Directly involved. No, like, just, you can almost see the fanboyism either side based on the comment on the situation sometimes.
Oh, completely.
Well, it's just, I think it's just people like trying to look smart a lot of the time in those comments feeds as well. Like people love like lauding, especially Formula One fans. No offense to any Formula One fans who might be listening, but literally like there's one, I've said this so many times, there is one thing Formula One fans love more than anything else, and that is being right.
I've loved as well with this in particular how many times someone has just been like, oh, well, legally, blah, 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 blah. And then the next guy's been like, are you a lawyer?
Are you a lawyer?
Because I don't think you are.
Brilliant. Okay, let's talk more about Formula One and the racing, shall we?
Let's talk about Haas. So I guess, first of all, Magnussen managed to get himself 20 seconds worth of penalties, all of which I think was completely fine. He had the contact with Albon, which was pretty messy.
You think it's fine that he did it, or you think it's fine that he got the penalties?
He got the penalties,
Okay, just checking.
Important distinction. The Albon thing was pretty clumsy. I think that was definitely worthy of a penalty. He just kind of...
Clumsy's the word, I think, for that.
Drove across as if he wasn't there.
Almost.
Was malicious.
It wasn't, it wasn't a chop, but it was definitely... it was clumsy, I would say,
If it, he was looking at the apex and the braking zone and not the car alongside him. Then he got another 10-second penalty for passing Tsunoda off track, which apparently baffled the F1 TV commentators, who apparently didn't get the memo that passing off track penalties were going to be increased from 5 seconds to 10 seconds this season. I don't know how they didn't know that. But there we go.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, all of which led to the situation where Hülkenberg, who was one of the few drivers who didn't pit under the safety car, was running 10th, needed to pit again. So Kevin Magnussen just drove really slowly and kept everyone else behind him.
We should just before we get too far into this, it's very important to know that he was asked to do that. I believe it was after, it was before he knew that he had a 20, all this was before he knew he was going to be serving 20 second penalty. So it's not like he went into this thing. He already had the 10 second penalty for Albon, but he didn't know he was getting the second 10 second penalty when this all started.
Right, I see what you mean. I did read the radio transcript earlier, so I should remember the order it happened in. I already forgot.
Yeah, they told him he needed to go slowly, and then it transpired that he'd got this next penalty.
And yes, so he managed to hold them off behind long enough so that Hulk could pit, come out in, well, it came out in 11th, then Joe had to pit, inherited 10th, scored a point, which for those bottom five teams is
important.
Huge. It's gold. Like this year especially, very much looks like we've got a top five and a bottom five, and any opportunity that a bottom five get to score a point, they're going to have to take. The team formerly known as Minardi have said it was unsportsmanlike and said they won't discuss it with the FIA.
Wow. Okay. Well, here's my response to that. Qatar 2021, I believe Red Bull team number two were slowing down another team that's not even any connected to them. That didn't seem very sporting to me.
No. Or a couple of years before that when Hamilton was trying to back Rosberg into the people behind, so Rosberg got overtaken because that was the only way he could stop Rosberg winning the title. Like, it's happened before.
Not the first time.
And, you know,
people do back, that's part of racing, is backing people up is part of, part of
look,
the game.
You can't just go slowly and people can't get past you. It's not scalextric. Like,
yeah, it's up to them behind you to be faster and get around you.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong. On some circuits, on the odd circuit, like a Monaco, it's a lot easier to do it, admittedly. And here is one of the easier circuits because of the walls, but it's not impossible to pass here at all. And Kevin Magnussen could not have just gone, right, well, I'm just keeping this in fifth and trundling along at 100 miles an hour and no one's going to pass me. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, no one looks back at whatever year Monaco it was where Senna held up, I think, Mansell, like for lap after lap after lap. He was clearly way, way, way slower, but he held him off and I believe it was for a race win. And people don't look back at that race and say it was unsporting of...
No. Ricardo did it a few years ago. Mark,
when he had the hybrid failure, didn't he? And he basically only had a combustion engine. He didn't have any hybrid power.
Alonso holding up Hamilton at Hungary so that Ocon could get a thing.
The examples keep coming. And like, at risk of massively oversimplifying it, like, if you're going to complain about the person in front of you being slow, then overtake them. Like, I know it's not quite that simple, but it's a race.
Yeah.
It's a race and you're complaining about the person in front of you being slow. Like,
be faster than them.
I just don't buy their complaints. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't. There is an argument to say the off-track pass and knowing he had all those penalties, maybe, you know, the penalty aspect of it, knowing he was going to get 20 seconds anyway, and his race was ruined. He was going to, it's kind of like, well, but even then, like, that just shows that the rules are not fit for purpose. I think if you're going to penalize someone for impeding or for unsportsmanlike behavior or for passing off track, if you want that person to have to give that place back, then you have to make it a drive-through penalty so that they're off the track and out of the way. Otherwise, a time penalty is not an appropriate penalty for that infringement, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think partially there's an argument to bring, but that's the thing, a drive-through penalty is at least 20 seconds added to your race time. Mm. Like,
well,
that's a big
penalty. Probably, but it's about 18, 19,
Which he got two 10-second penalties. If you gave him a drive-through for even one of them, that's suddenly adding 30 seconds onto his race time, and that seems excessive.
Yeah. But so then it should be give the position back. Tell them to give the position back.
Make the decision faster. Tell them to give the position back. That's ultimately, I think, the fix they need for this. But I think all of that discussion does take away from the fact that A, it was a strategically very smart move from Haas, and B, in a race where the first half, Kevin Magnussen drove pretty poorly, the second half, he drove exceptionally to defend from all those guys behind him. Like, really, really impressive stuff.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was really good.
Yeah, so good on them, I say.
Did Hulkenberg get out with about a 3-second gap or something ahead of them?
Something like that, yeah.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it happened like as the commentary team at Sky, on Sky, because I happened to watch Sky commentary this week, and I can tell you, Crofty will scream and shout at anything. That man screams and shouts during a Formula One race like it's his job just to scream and shout, and that's the only reason he's employed. Anyway, they called it like more or less, they were like, oh, it might be that he gets out in front. And then literally that was as he was coming out of the pits and he was 3 seconds in front. How did you not work that one out? I'm barely watching it and I worked that out.
Yeah, it feels like everyone watching was ahead of the commentators in general this week. Classic. Which is a bit weird. Quick mention to Mercedes. They say they think there's a fundamental problem with the car in high speed. They finished 6th and 9th. They reckon the three high speed corners on the circuit alone were costing them half a second a lap.
I can believe it.
The onboards from Hamilton when Norris just disappeared every time they got to the high speed. Wild.
You could see, I've never seen such a big variance in where two cars are so different. It's different sections of track, like across the course of a lap. Hamilton was getting to within like 4 tenths, and then suddenly he's like a second and a half back, more than a second and a half back. It's like, whoa,
it was like watching the old LMP1 days when there was a race at Silverstone in particular where I think it was the Porsche just disappeared down the straights, and then the Audi would reel them back into the corners. Just like ebbed and flowed. He was like watching that. It was
really, which was weird. Brilliant. Yeah. I remember that.
It's incredible. But that
Mercedes, I'm very, very concerned. Very concerned about the Mercedes.
Not a good car. My prediction of Hamilton winning a race this year is already looking in tatters.
Yeah. Well, I think I do think there's a lot of performance for them to unlock still, but I think they clearly have a high speed. I mean, every mouthpiece at Mercedes has said the same thing. We've got a problem with high speed. It's quite obvious to any bystander that they've got pretty big problems in the high speed as well. So I think if they can figure that out, because they're saying that the correlation is off, that, you know, everything in their simulations is showing one thing and then they set the car up that way and it behaves differently. So if they can get that correlation, if they can get it right, then they'll probably be of quite a decent car. But until they do, then these next few races in Australia, if they're having problems in high speed, they're going to be suffering.
Especially with the changes to that track as well.
I bet they wish it was still the old version. They'll be looking forward to Monaco and Hungary, I imagine. McLaren. Lando Norris jumped the start and got away with it. So the stewards sort of released a clarification, and they basically said the rules state clearly that the judgment of it, whether it was a jump start or not, is made based on the transponder in the car. The transponder did not say it was a jump start, therefore they can't penalize him.
It's just ridiculous. So we can all watch a jump start, and because using the electronic devices that are cameras that allow us to see that, but because the specific electronic device that is designed to detect a jump start has essentially failed because it's obvious, then we're not going to apply a penalty.
I think that's the problem,
clear as day, jump the start.
I get that they have to, like, they will probably say it has to be investigated if that doesn't trigger it automatically. Like, if that triggers it, it is a jump start, hands down, no other question. But in the situation where the car clearly moves, I mean, he was outside his box, whether the transponder thing went off or not, his front wheels had crossed the line. Because the rules, I'm pretty sure, somewhere else state that you can't start with your wheels over that line. And his wheels were over that line. So whether he jumped the start or not, and whether the transponder went off or not, is probably irrelevant by the other standard of the rules, which is you can't start with your wheel over that line in the box, which he did.
I believe they call it incorrect positioning in starting box or something, something along those lines. Because they got Alonso on being sideways out of it last year, and then controversially reversed that. It turns out controversially reversed that that penalty. Yeah. But that's a whole other podcast.
It is. It's bizarre. I guess.
I think it's just ridiculous. I get the argument that as well. Like, people have been arguing that he didn't gain from it, or he didn't. He actually lost out for it in the end because he stopped and then started again. But even so, it doesn't matter. The rule is, you go when the lights go out, and he went before the lights go out.
I mean, that's
essence of
like,
the rule is that.
Yeah.
In that regard, though, that's like saying that, I don't know, say someone only uses one compound during the race, so they go like medium to medium instead of to a hard or to a soft. It's like, well, they didn't gain any positions that they wouldn't have gained otherwise. Like, it doesn't matter. They didn't follow the rule.
They didn't really lose positions even in the end. That's the problem. Like, even though people say he didn't lose out, but actually, or he didn't gain anything, but he didn't lose for the transgression either. And for me, that's wrong. Like, if you're going to anticipate the start and try and gain an advantage like that in a similar, you know, think back to the Valtteri Bottas Austria incident where he went literally the exact moment the light went out, like in the same frame.
Yeah.
He went, and I watched that. That was in the days when I had access to all the footage and stuff. So I watched it and watched it and watched it to see if it was a jump start. And I can tell you, it wasn't a jump start, but unless he went in between those two frames in that microsecond, then it's not a jump start. But it is. It's absolutely an anticipated start. But they're two. You can't get, again, the transponder rule saved him, really, because the transponder would have gone off after the lights had gone out, regardless.
It feels like another case of, like we've talked about before with other things, they're policing the outcome, not the action.
It's possible, it's probable, yeah.
I feel there's an element of that, at least.
Definitely. But they should be applying the rules. The problem with this as well is then, so now it's okay to do a jump start as long as your sensor doesn't trip.
Yeah.
Now the teams know that, so they can engineer the cars and such that they'll be trying to figure out how they can engineer it so they can jump the start, right? Someone somewhere is trying to figure that out.
And it's mad because I've seen footage before, I'm sure you can find it out there, of Charlie Whiting stood on the gantry at the start of a race, and
as
the cars start moving, Charlie Whiting just points and goes, he jumped the start. And that was as robust as the system was back then. And that feels like it did a better job than this.
But going full circle is what Norris did this weekend was so blatant that everybody in the entire world went, oh, Charlie Whiting style, and just pointed at him and went, he did a start too quick.
Yeah, literally, like I said to the person I was watching it with, Matt, I said to him, that is a slam dunk. That there's no way he's getting away with that. It's absolutely a slam dunk. And somehow it just, no further action, like much later on, way later on in the race as well. Yeah. Bizarre. So bizarre. Strangest, really one of the strangest ones I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. Really weird. Quick word on the team formerly known as Minardi, who were already having a rough race. And then
love how you're sticking to this.
Oh, completely.
We are.
I refuse to say
that. Chris,
sorry,
committed to this.
they had one of the worst pit stops. It didn't actually appear on the world feed on TV, but they managed to nearly put the tyres on the wrong side of Ricciardo's car, realise and swap them round. Then, in the meantime, one of the jacks failed and he ended up stationed
Benny
for
Hill.
About a minute. Yeah, it was atrocious. That aside, though, Ricciardo's having a rough start to the year, man. Like, Tsunoda out-qualified him pretty handily. Ricciardo had kind of clawed his way back to, like, looking like he was going to finish behind. He still finished a position behind Tsunoda, and he was kind of within a few seconds. And then he just had a really lazy spin towards the end as well and drop back again.
Tyres were gone, weren't they, by then? So.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen to anyone else.
Considering this was built up as like, this is where Ricciardo proves he's supposed to be in the Red Bull next year, I ain't seen any signs of that.
Well, a lot of races, though. Long old season.
But
there's a whole season's worth of races, literally, like 22 races.
Yeah.
I mean, by some standard, that's two seasons of the race.
Yeah.
Depending on what year you're looking at.
But yeah.
Yeah, not good. Not great from Minardi there. Next one?
I'm expecting more. Speaking of pit stop disasters, Sauber managed to repeat their wheel nut issue that Bottas had in Bahrain, this time with Zhou. Didn't really cost many points. They weren't going to finish in points anyway, but it was actually a pretty decent drive from Zhou to that point. He was up to 11th, but same wheel nut problem. Which I'm pretty sure last week we were like, oh, these are the simple problems that it's really easy to fix. Like, they'll have that sorted in no time, and the same thing's happened again. And then Bottas only managed to finish ahead of his teammate. He was terrible on the hard tyres, and then they were the only ones, I think, to do a second stop, which didn't work for them. Pretty miserable at Sauber right now. But in sort of Sauber news, Audi, having had lots of rumours that Audi were like getting cold feet and thinking of not doing F1 anymore, Audi have suddenly announced that instead of working up to 75% ownership, they're going to be taking over the team in its entirety in time for 2026. It sounds like this is kind of the end of a bit of an internal struggle with Andreas Seidel, ex-McLaren team principal. Basically, it sounds like he's been pushing for this so they can pump more resources and money into the team now to get them up to speed before it becomes Audi. He's now going to become the Audi F1 team CEO. I guess looking at where Sauber are at right now, there's no sign they're going to make massive improvements next year. Audi aren't going to just turn up in 2026 and suddenly be at the front taking over a team that was at the back. So it makes sense to sort of start ramping that relationship up sooner, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think so. If they're going to do it anyway, then you might as well just get on with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of faith in Andreas Seidel. He seems like a very, very smart guy. So
yeah. Well, he did very good work at McLaren, getting them to more or less to where they are now, pretty much. I mean, fair play to the new management there as well, but they certainly wouldn't be where they are now without his hard work leading up to it.
For sure. Should we do some awards? Driver of the day?
I mean, it's easy. Driver of the day is easy peasy.
Yeah. Is anyone going to argue against it being Bearman? The Bearman?
The Bearman.
The Bearman.
Did you notice he's got a bear on top of his crash helmet?
Seems like route one, but I've got time for it.
It worked. Move of the day.
Leclerc on Perez on the first lap to maintain second when it looked like it was lost, I thought it was decent. That was a highlight. What else we got? I think there were some staunch defensive moves. Hamilton's battle with, was it Norris? Or was it Piastri? That battle was like heated and intense for a long, long time. Yeah. And that was entertaining. Probably the most entertaining part of it. But then Oscar's eventual move to get by him was also pretty good. So.
Yeah.
Did that happen?
In a roundabout way, I could maybe make an argument for Magnussen's defence, but that's pushing it a bit, probably.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a proper one.
No. I think is it maybe Oscar? Is it his move on Hamilton?
Was it on Hamilton?
In the end.
Can anyone remember this? Because someone in the Discord has written Oscar. And I'm assuming it was on Hamilton, but I don't actually recall seeing it because I wasn't...
It took him a very long time to get it done.
I think given the fact it took him as long as it... I do remember. Wasn't it just a DRS pass?
Well, I'm just trying to remember. Was the final pass actually any good?
Yeah, Hamilton pit. I'm sure Hamilton right pit. Now.
There was one that he put on him that then Hamilton got back, though, wasn't there, if I remember right?
Oh, because he sent it into the... went off track and didn't want that 10-second
penalty. Oh, no, he went
off
track, though, didn't he?
Yeah, and then gave it back to Hamilton.
He went off
track. I don't know if that was...
it back, so...
Yeah, it was a McLaren. But I don't think any of this is worth move of the day anyway, to be honest.
I mean, my original candidacy was for... the Leclerc v Perez in the first few corners.
I can go with that.
That's where I was going to go originally. Because I was going to make some sort of silly joke about, and that's where the race stopped being interesting.
Yeah, let's go with that. Last award?
The race stopped being interesting after qualifying, but yeah.
Fair.
Honestly, what the f*** are we doing here?
Okay, there's quite a long list here, quite a few we've come up with.
Few we've already talked about. Obviously, the Norris jump start situation was a bit ludicrous.
Ridiculous.
The whole Magnussen situation, I mean, it's more the complaining about Magnussen than anything else that I think is it's on there.
Yeah, let's try and keep it on track and inside Formula One. You've got pin penalty here. Is that for the
Academy? We'll talk about that in a bit. Yeah.
Okay.
That was nominated from the chat, so I'll put it in there, but we'll mention that.
I think the Perez penalty, Perez 5-second penalty for impeding Alonso in the pits, unsafe release.
Oh, the unsafe release.
The fact he ran a red light to do it as well. His team hadn't even given him the green light to leave the pit box. That is hazardous, man. That is a sketchy situation. And he only got a 5-second penalty for it. And yet Magnussen had 20 seconds worth of penalties for seemingly innocuous incidents, I would say.
That is a good point, because normally on safe releases, it's when the team have released a car
into the path of another driver and impeded them and ruined their race.
Into the gap and they can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the fact that he actually just ran the line.
Just went.
Like, surely that's, that's going to surely make a much more dangerous situation.
Apparently,
I actually forgot about that, but that is a good one.
It's only five seconds. 5 seconds. Not
like,
a deterrent.
Oh no, 5-second penalty. Yeah, I'll have that.
They just need to get rid of 5-second penalties altogether. No more 5-second penalties. And they need to take it out of the rules because it's not enough of a penalty for really anything. It should be 10-second penalties if they really don't want people to break these rules. And then probably certain ones should be drive-throughs, I think. Mm-hmm. If it's a penalty that you need to get a car out of the way of the car or to really punish a car for impeding one way or another car or being in a position that they shouldn't be, then it has to, the whole reason a drive-through penalty exists is to deal with that situation. If a car is in a place on track where it shouldn't be and it's affecting cars around it, having as a result of breaking the rules, then they should be forcibly moved out of the way, right?
Yeah.
And the only way you do that is by giving them a drive-through. And if they still don't do that, then it's black and white flag, you're off.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I mean, just getting rid of 5 seconds penalties isn't going to deter anyone. Just look at Kevin Magnussen.
Yeah. Which means we could go, penalties. For WTF, we could just go penalties in general. Yeah. Because
we could just go penalties in
general. It satisfies the criteria of being on track.
Yeah.
And there it catches quite a few incidents this race.
There was a specific element to the Norris thing, which was literally on Friday after qualifying. They were like talking about his position, like, oh, it might have been Saturday morning, actually, whichever way around it was. But in the lead up to the race, between qualifying and the race, he said, like, you know, what do you have to do? Or what would you have to do for it to go wrong from there? And he's like, jump the start, and then literally proceeded to jump
then
the start.
Just jumps it, just yeah, like does what
that,
he said.
That was a huge candidate for me, just because of like the
that is
flippant,
fun.
The flippant joke, and then actually inadvertently doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Get a lot of egg on your face for jokes like that, don't you? Yeah. Sometimes.
We should give an honorable mention as well to the red McLaren at turn 2.
Oh yeah, the broken camera that's been in Formula 1 for so long now.
Clarence is making a good point in the chat. Perez got a penalty point and he's like almost at a race ban.
Yeah, that's a whole thing. That's a thing. 4 off a race ban.
Yeah, he's eight out of 12 now.
And he's going to go most of the season with those as well. With that
they don't expire for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gasly got very close a couple of years ago and then he mysteriously started getting a lot of reprimands but no actual penalty points. So I think he'll take something very egregious for Perez to actually cross that threshold.
Wasn't that a period where Gasly was getting silly penalty points for things he'd not actually done though as well?
Yeah.
He was like, he's like got an off-track penalty. That's a penalty point on your license.
Yeah. Oh, he tied his shoelaces.
Should we just say penalties in general?
He's got a penalty.
Go for penalties in general. That way
penalties in general.
Oh, he got in his car from the wrong side. It's a penalty.
Tom, do you want to do us some predictions?
Yes, I'll quickly run us through predictions. So we got a little bit of a mulligan, if that's what you want to call it, because we decided that for anything we'd put Carlos in, we'd have another go.
Made no difference whatsoever. Did it?
I mean, it did for me. You gained for me. I just went route one and just went double Verstappen, so picked up 2 points. I thought, I'm not messing around at this point. Chris, it changed nothing for Chris. He had Verstappen winning, Gasly first DNF. Stu, it didn't change anything for you because you changed yours to Alonso and fastest in quality.
Which, at the time,
to be fair, at the time looked like a good shout. But,
yeah, it did.
Yeah. Sadly,
to be fair, he was still good in quali. He was what? He was up there on the grid, wasn't he? Yeah, fourth.
Yeah. He was still up there. Yeah. In terms of everybody else, there were a lot of 4 out of 5 this week. Unfortunately, too many to name. So I would seriously suggest heading to the website if you want to check if you are one of them. There were 15 altogether. And for the vast majority, the thing that let most people down was Zhou Guanyu's finishing position. So. I think there's only one person where that wasn't the case, but yeah, take a look at the website and you'll find everything you need to know about that. Quick stop into Fantasy Corner. So with the official F1 Fantasy game, El Payne came out top this week with 282 nice. Points.
That's a good name. And, strong name.
Ricky Bobby Racing School is top overall with 501 points. A name we know from last season. Ricky Bobby was around the top of that and maybe the winner of last season's fantasy. At least, if definitely not, at least there. Very up there at the top for a while.
Sure.
And then jumping over to grid rival, Mighty Hawk 44 scored the highest this week with 978 points. And also that jumped Mighty Hawk 44 into the lead overall with 1,872 points altogether. If you want any info on how to get involved with either our predictions league or either the fantasy leagues, head to backofthegrid.com and there's information on all of it there and a section for the fantasy leagues where you can get the codes and join those as well.
Nice. Okay. Let's have a very, very quick visit into the feeder series, which we've been saying for a while.
Very quick.
We won't get too into Formula 2 other than to say it was fantastic. Like both the F2 races this weekend were so good.
Yeah, they were.
Enzo Fittipaldi was just like super on it. He's like double overtake for the lead in the feature race. That was
amazing.
So good.
And then the I think it was for third place in the feature race as well. It was like absolute photo finish. Like he got
three wide across
final
the line.
Corner. Like, oh, so good.
Yeah. If anyone out there who's not watching Formula 2, it's well worth going back and watching the highlights.
It's a lot better than Formula 1.
Good to see Prema seem to have got their car a bit more together. And obviously Behrmann, who did put it on pole, wasn't in the race, but sort of starting to see Antonelli kind of settling in and showing what he's capable of. Very aggressive driver is old Kimi Antonelli. Some of the moves he was trying to pull were full on. And then we also had, fittingly on International Women's Day, the first races of F1 Academy this season. Kind of as everyone expected, Dorian Pin was basically at the front by a decent chunk. She took both pole positions and on the road at least won both the races. And then Abby Pulling was consistently her closest competitor, again, kind of as expected. However, Dorian Pin lost the win of the second race. She got a post-race drive-through, which was converted to 20 seconds because she didn't see the checkered flag. Nobody in the team bothered to radio to tell her that she had won the race. So she just drove a whole extra lap at racing speed, took the checkered flag a second time, which is super duper against the rules. Luckily, they hadn't sent anyone out to the grid yet because they'd all seen her pelting round. In the end, they had to throw red flags to like get her to stop. So bizarre.
Strange.
So weird.
Very weird.
Yeah. I mean, it obviously sucks for her to lose the win. Honestly, I think a hefty penalty is probably fair under those circumstances. I mean, it's on the team far more than it's on her.
Yeah. But I mean, well, you kind of... Did the radio break or something? Like you'd be communicating enough to know like what lap you're on and that it was the final. And you know, there's a white flag before the checkered flag, so you'd surely see the white flag come over, and then
if
you'd see the checkered
flag.
If
the radio did break, then it was very convenient that it broke the moment she crossed the finish line and then started working again exactly a lap later. I think it seems more likely that they were busy celebrating with each other and just didn't pay attention to what was going on.
Oops.
To be fair to her as well, a lot of people pointed out that the way the checkered flag is positioned at that track, there's a like light board thing right in front of it, so you only actually see it for a split second as you drive past.
Well, that's ridiculous, isn't it?
Obviously, for everyone else, as soon as the leaders cross the line, that light board will display a checkered flag because the race is over. But for the leader, it's not lit up until they've crossed the line. At which
that's so stupid. They're waving a checkered flag. Like, surely you can activate it as the leader comes up to the line.
You think
like, that's the whole point of that flag.
Even the karting track we went to a few weeks ago had exactly that feature. Yeah. But apparently a homologated Formula One circuit can't have that.
Ridiculous. Absolutely. I mean, you got to feel for the driver.
Oh, yeah, really feel for her because she completely deserved it. She was so dominant the whole weekend. Some decent racing. Like, it was a little messy. It very much looked like a series that had a lot of rookie drivers at a track they'd never been to before.
Yeah, and a few drivers who couldn't quite figure out where their nose was.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially in that first race. There was a lot of damaged fronts of cars in that first race. But yeah, it is only the first race of a brand new series. So you're going to get a lot of rookie sort of errors, aren't you?
Definitely. Right, should we wrap up with some inbox?
Let's do some inbox.
Let's do it.
Keep me saying now.
Stay out.
Box. Hey, man.
Mike P says, "Hey man, congratulations on 300 episodes. Thank you, Mike P. Ricardo has entered just over 240 races. Does he stand a chance of making it to 300 too? Based on current performance, I'd argue no. But if they keep expanding the calendar the way they're doing, then he might make it in like the next year."
Well, yeah. Right now he's not driving like a driver that's going to make another 60 races, I don't think.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, technically, he'll get to at least 260-something, won't he? Mathematically speaking, I think. If he's already over 240, it's 20 races left the season.
Yeah.
Or do you think he's gone before the end of the season?
Nah. He'll make it the end of the season. But
so he'll get
Give him a chance. He didn't get much running time last season after he broke his blooming hand. So...
That didn't help.
I just wondered, because as I started saying that, you were like half shaking your head, so I was just checking.
I give him a chance. Next one.
Next from Kenzie, who says, due to his excellent debut on such short notice too, will that give Behrman the final push to be given a full-time F1 driver next year? Will it be Haas or Sauber as a farewell marked by Ferrari before Audi comes in? And on a similar note, Macheco says, it feels like there's a lot of dead wood on the grid this year. He's pointing out Sargeant, Bottas, Hulkenberg, Stroll, Joe and Ricciardo.
Hulkenberg?
Should more young drivers be rewarded based on Behrman's performance at the weekend?
I agree with Stu's name check on Hulkenberg there, where I'm just thinking, out of all those drivers, that's the one that I would say is probably doing enough to keep his seat.
Swap Hulk for Magnussen in that list, for sure. I think Behrman was already going to be on the grid next year. I think this weekend has just cemented it, to be honest. I think he's a shoo-in for a Haas drive next year.
Yeah, I think as well with these younger drivers kind of coming in at such short notice and actually being able to perform the likes of him and Lawson, it just bodes well for like what is coming next. I think like there's, as long as we get the space to put these drivers on the grid more permanently, I think it bodes well for what we've got coming through in the future, which is a good thing as well.
I mean, wouldn't it be great if we had a full quota of cars on the grid? Then we wouldn't mind so much
there
having a bit of deadwood. You know, if there was space for a bit of deadwood, then it wouldn't be such an issue, would it? Yeah. Shall we do the next one?
Last one. Chris McNulty says, the decision to rebrand the underperforming Renault to an utterly dismal Alpine seems like a marketing masterstroke. What other F1 decisions look like genius given enough time? What other decisions will look like genius given enough time? Hamilton to Mercedes, for example.
I'll tell you a current one actually that I think will play out really well, which is Honda to Aston Martin. Because I mean obviously Honda have been very, as we've said already in this podcast, very in out of F1 and gone through pretty ropey periods, but I think Aston Martin having a factory engine will be extremely good for them.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see the Aston Martin DB9 Type R. for the Japanese car fans of you out there.
What else? I think Hamilton to Ferrari is going to work out. I mean, it's going to work out better than Hamilton at Mercedes is working out right now, at the very least, isn't it?
Well, it can't get much worse, I don't think, than
it's
is
a pretty low bar
right now. I think, yeah, I think it looks like he's made the right call. We'll see where we're at, you know, midway through the season when Ferrari's strategy have bitten Leclerc and Sainz a few times. Yeah. See where we're at the end of the season for that one. But yeah, right now it does look like a decent call.
And I think that is about everything we've got for this week. So as ever, if you want to get in touch with us, you can go to backthegrid.com, where you can also see the Predictions League results and links to fantasy and all of that stuff. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those things, you can find us. If you want to check out the Discord, you can go to patreon.com/backofthegrid and find out how to join that there. Without getting too introspective, 300's a number I don't think we ever thought we'd reach. So thank you every single person who's listened, downloaded, sent in questions, all of that stuff. We super duper appreciate it. Special thanks as well to our Discord community, who are just a really nice bunch of people in what is an otherwise very toxic internet. They're a really great bunch. They sent us a little congratulations card early today, which was very sweet of them.
Really sweet. That was really, really nice. I read every message as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone who has written that. Yeah.
You guys are the best.
And whoever helped organize it.
And to play us out this week, we have a song from our jingle maker in chief, Ashley Foster, aka Yuka Snaily, who was inspired by our Valtteri Bottas Will Not Talk last week. So we'll let Ash play us out, but until next time, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, Milton Keynes. We are Valtteri Bottas. And the car said it will not project. Reject. Wheel guns to spawn. The crew's been trained to take the show and the crown. They've been dreaming. Monaco. Oh, no. Monaco. Oh, no. My front light's going home. Still attached to my car. Valtteri Bottas. And the cross that it will not. Valtteri Bottas. And the cross-fitted wheel nuts, the seconds are ticking. And my championship's slipping away. Thank you, Milton Keynes!
Wowza.
There we go.
And here's the 300 more.